Welcome to Law Light, a quick dose of legal levity as we shine some light on the heartbeat of the legal field.
I'm Melinda Delmonico, CEO of Gibson Arnold & Associates, and today I'm joined by Aaron Weber, President and Managing Director of Littler. Elected President and Managing Director in 2021, Aaron guides the strategic direction and global growth strategy for the world's largest labor and employment law firm. Aaron also oversees the management and operations of Littler's more than 1,600 attorneys and offices worldwide. So Aaron, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So I'd like to start off with you talking and discussing a bit about your current role in the organization.
Sure. So it changed a couple of months ago. I joined the law firm in November of 2001 as an associate, a senior associate. Littler was my third law firm. I was very lucky to be at two other great places, but I knew I wanted to do labor and employment. And I knew even back then that if that's what I wanted to do, there was no better place to be than Littler. So I joined as a senior associate, was elevated to shareholder in about 2005, served in various management roles and capacities over the course of the years. It's one thing this firm has been great about in terms of making opportunities for anyone interested to serve in those types of leadership roles. And then last August of 2020, was elected to serve as the next firm's managing director and president, as you indicated, which is an 8-year term. So I took over, I had a nice 4.5 months of transition, which was really helpful from our prior two managing directors, Tom Bender and Jeremy Roth, and took over officially January 15th of 2021. So I'm 1 day short of my first, of another anniversary of months. So that's where we are today.
Well, congratulations. And I am so delighted to see you in this role because I think it's so inspiring to see how you progressed in your career and so well received by your colleagues.
Well, thanks. I mean, I felt very lucky to work with you over the years. And so it's, I appreciate it. I know time flies, right? As I was going through that diatribe, I thought, gosh, it doesn't seem that long ago that I came on to this firm as an associate. So here we are.
How did you end up going into law?
So my dad, I grew up in a small town in Northeast Missouri on a farm, actually. My dad was a state court judge and my mom was a math teacher, an elementary math teacher. My dad subsequently was appointed to the federal bench in 95. So I kind of grew up right around lawyers in a small town, literally 2,100 people in the town in which I grew up. Being the local judge, we would have a couple nights a week. We would have dinner at home with lawyers around the table who were in town for hearings or trials or whatever else, and they'd be at our house, both sides, opposing sides of the case, sitting at our little dinner table in our farmhouse in Northeast Missouri. So I kind of grew up around lawyers and was comfortable. Honestly, in all candor, I didn't have a lifetime dream of being a lawyer. I actually was an English and psychology major in college, and quickly realized upon graduation that there were really no jobs for that double major without grad school. And not being that great in math and science, I went with law.
Well, I have to say that I think psychology would serve you very well in your current role.
I got to tell you, I probably should have gotten a doctorate.
So did you shape your career or did your career shape you?
You know, probably a little bit of each. But when I think about it, I think I probably did more shaping. And, for anyone out there listening, I guess I would say that my advice would be take control of your career and be the one to shape it. I think that we all find ourselves in positions over the course of our career where we feel like we're being shaped more. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I felt like I've been lucky a few times in my career to realize I don't like what I'm doing and to be able to change it, right? I started off and I knew I wanted to be a trial lawyer. So I got into family law back in the mid 90s. That's how I started, because you could basically do two things back then to get in court a lot, right? Family law or criminal law. So I went with family law, and I loved being in court every day. It was an amazing experience. I learned things every day. And now that the statute is run, I feel comfortable in saying I screwed things up every day, but nothing to lose a case, of course, but to learn from. And I knew every time I said something dumb or didn't say something that I thought later I should have, I would never make that mistake again. So it really was, you know, learning kind of trial by fire. But a few years into it, I realized the toll that family law was taking on me personally, and how I didn't enjoy the topic, right? It was not fun to be getting calls on Friday night from clients whose visitation rights were being impinged upon, according to them. So I was lucky because the law firm where I was at the time also had employment law, and they had a need for an associate in that area. And so I kind of stumbled into it and thought, wow, I really like this. And I did a few other areas of law after that. And I guess by process of elimination, found what I liked. And I, to answer your question, I feel like there are too many, even my peers, right? Like too many friends we have in the legal industry who find themselves in jobs or areas of the law that doesn't really do it for them, right? Like they're not really passionate about it, or even worse, they really dislike it and feel like they can't get out. I mean, the law is a big industry, as you know. There are lots of things we can do. And I, to your question about shaping, I feel like I've been lucky to realize when I found myself in positions where I wasn't really enjoying it, I could change.
Well, and especially at a firm like Littler, when you are, you're talking about practice area changes, but within Littler, the size of your firm, I'd love to hear a little bit more about Littler, because the path within employment law is pretty diverse as well. And obviously with the history of the firm, you've had a very robust, thriving career at Littler.
I mean, you're right about the, I always joke with people who maybe aren't in the industry to explain kind of what we do and who we are. And I say, if you think of labor and employment law as a big umbrella, right, or a big area of the law, there are tons of things under it, right? And I'm making little lines with my hand, tons of topics under it that you can really become a subject matter expert in, right? It's very likely that under the umbrella of labor and employment, you can find something that really interests you, right? Something about which you're really passionate, whether it's equal pay or, you know, race discrimination or wage and hour law or counseling clients or training or whatever it is. So I feel, you know, lucky again, that's kind of a theme in my, I think, career so far, to have kind of stumbled into that and realized how much I liked it. To your point about opportunities at this law firm, I was at two amazing firms prior to this. But once I was here for a very short period of time at Littler, I remember looking back thinking like, they're just, these opportunities for a young female lawyer that I was getting early in my career here just aren't, I don't think I would have gotten these anywhere else, right? I'll give you an example. And I think these examples are still true today. I think this law firm has done a really amazing job of allowing kind of an entrepreneurial spirit to flourish while at the same time, right, being the largest labor and employment firm in the world. I came on in 01, made partner in 05. Sometime in 2002 or 2003, our managing director at the time was a woman named Wendy Tice Wallner in San Francisco. And we were a lot smaller, maybe 220 lawyers at the time. And I remember seeing these emails go back and forth internally, right? Saying, hey, I need local counsel in St. Louis or Kansas City, places in Missouri from whence I had come, right? And I remember calling her, and we were farming this stuff out all the time. So I remember calling up Wendy, who had no idea who this associate in Denver was, who was calling her, right? And I said, hey, you know, I'm an associate in Denver. I could do this work and we could keep it in the firm if you want, because I'd practiced in Missouri for 5 or 6 years by that point. And she goes, yeah, sure, go for it. And so I started doing that. And the first several years of my shareholdership, I was doing predominantly Missouri and even Kansas work, because I was licensed in both places from Denver. It led to our next managing director coming to Denver, Marco Merkinich, coming to Denver and saying, you know, wouldn't it be easier if you had an address, if you opened an office there? And I said, well, yeah. So I opened the Kansas City office in 2006. St. Louis, we opened in 2008. Soon thereafter, I was nominated or got on the Littler Board of Directors, right, as a relatively young female attorney. And so I give you those examples only as examples that I've been lucky enough to benefit from in the course of my time here to really get those leadership opportunities earlier in my career, which, you know, I think certainly helped me get to the point I'm at today.
But it also is a strong statement about the culture of Littler, right? With giving opportunities to the associates and the partners developing.
Whenever I'm talking, you're totally right. Whenever I'm talking to a lateral, I give them examples like that. And I say, if there is an area of labor and employment about which you are passionate, or a geography, right? Like my example, Missouri. You know, my partner, Josh Kirkpatrick, when we were junior shareholders, he did the same thing in Montana. And a big part of his practice is in Montana. And that's how we cover that large state. But I tell laterals, you know, if there's something about which you're passionate, no one here is going to say no. If it makes good business sense for you to spend time and energy developing that, Phil Gordon is another example. You know, Phil, I remember interviewing Phil in 2002, and he was a litigator and said he thought he wanted to develop privacy expertise. And Phil's now one of the foremost privacy experts in the country, right? Because he was given the tools to develop that because he wanted to do it. So I think you're right. I think we all appreciate that, right? We've been at other places and maybe weren't given that ability to really develop something that we cared about and we thought would make good business sense for the firm.
What are your biggest career learnings?
You know, we've covered a little bit of it, which is if you don't like what you're doing, change. This is a long career that we all have, right? But a short life, right? and life's too short to be doing things you don't like, or doing things that don't bring you some type of joy or pleasure. So I think that, as I explained earlier, I felt fortunate to be in positions and with firms that supported my saying, I don't want any more of this family law. What else can I do? It landed me here. I think also, to my point earlier, to take ownership of our careers as early as possible. There will be things that happen in our careers that we have no control over, right? On a daily, weekly, annual basis, whatever the case, but there are a lot of things we can control and a lot of things we can direct. And I think a lot, especially maybe younger lawyers, don't feel that, aren't empowered or whatever, to really spend time thinking about where they want to end up. I'm not saying, like, I'm going a little bit opposite of what I said initially, because I didn't have a dream of being a lawyer. I have a sister who's 3 years younger than I, and we're very close. And we were talking a few years ago, and she said, I just always thought you'd be a coach. So here I am, right? Like, kind of in that role, lawyer coach, right? Coaching a lot of other lawyers as we try to run this business the best way that we can. But again, I think it's taking control and really spending time to think about where you want your career to go. And then I can't leave this question without saying, doing a lot of hard work and a lot of unglamorous work from time to time that you need to do to get there. I mentioned Josh earlier. Josh and I grew up together in the firm and were associates and then shareholders together. And I remember plenty of all-nighters, right, where we were drafting briefs and getting ready for trials or hearings or whatever else. Looking back, sure, it was fun. At the time, it wasn't fun. It was super tiring. But that's not required, right? But there are a lot of unglamorous tasks and work that we all have to kind of put in and do to get to where I think you may want to see your career going. And people will remember that. People in decision-making roles, you and I think can both attest, you know when people are doing the work. And you also know in your organization who you can look to do the work and who's doing the work versus people who are doing everything they can to avoid the work.
And how has the COVID work at home arrangement gone for the firm with the associates?
So, you know, that's the question of the year, right? Or the question of the 13 months. It's a challenge. It is. I mean, look, if you ask me from a business perspective, I would say that two different answers, right? I would say, look, our production looks good. People are showing that they can do this from home. They are stepping up. They are working hard. They're doing an amazing job. If you ask me from a health and well-being perspective, that's where I'm a lot more worried. And not just associates, shareholders, of counsel, special counsel, principals, all of our attorneys, all of our employees, I worry about. I spend a fair amount of time, trying to reach out to as many people as I can to just make sure people are doing okay, because this really is a law firm that, of course, we're a business and we've got to worry about numbers and production and all that stuff. But I really believe that our people are our number one priority. And, you know, clients are right there too. And sometimes I think of them as our people. But if our attorneys and staff and employees aren't, able to perform at their best and highest capacity, we're not going to get where we need to go. So I don't have all the answers. I wish I could sit here and tell you that I checked in with every single employee in my first 3 months and they're all killing it. They're killing it, but I do worry at what cost, just because this is tough, right? None of us have ever had anything like this before. I was in a conference yesterday with a lot of other law firm leaders, and someone who had spent a lot of time in her career investing in human capital type efforts said, we have no idea what we're going to be going back into, right? People have been stressed. They have been dealing with illness and death and isolation. And while we all want to get back as quickly as we can, none of us really know what that's going to look like. And I think we have to be prepared for it to not be as smooth as some may imagine. And that's okay. We're trying already to kind of ramp up what we can do to make sure that our people are okay, associates and all the way up and down the line. I mostly worry, getting back to your question, about our newest associates. We have a very, I would think, a unique culture that we're very proud of and that we really embrace and try to nurture. And I would summarize it by saying most people at this law firm, I think, like what they're doing, whether it's because they've had their days of family law like I did and found something they liked, or whether it's because, we really try to focus on relationships and work-life balance and things like that. People who have been here for a long time know that and are practicing that. The newer folks, whether it's associates, laterals, employees, they don't have the benefit of that. And so that I do worry about how we can make sure we get that those concepts conveyed to them adequately so that they feel it too.
Yeah. And I think that this is a bit of a challenging time. And I hear from other managing partners, the ability for associates to walk down the hall and tap a partner on the shoulder and say, what do you think about this? Yeah, it's an extra step. So when you talk about taking control over the career, this is probably a time of resilience for associates and new partners and shareholders and everyone in a law firm. But in particular, taking control of the career, there's a little bit of an obstacle on connection. And I think firms have really struggled with that in general this year.
So interesting. Agree with everything you said. And that's what I worry about. But here's a refreshing point that I've heard in a couple of these seminars so far. And from an associate group with which I was speaking last week, I hear from some groups that associates are actually doing better than we thought with regard to that mentoring piece. And I'll give it to you in this context. We're getting ready to go back. We're trying to figure out what our return to work is going to look like. And the thing that we keep coming back to is, all right, If you read the paper, turn on the news, people even read papers anymore, turn on the news or have any conversation with anyone, we can all agree that probably whatever it looks like for law firms or companies or whatever, people are going to be in the office less, right? So then we as shareholders immediately go to what you did, which is how are we going to mentor our people, right? We all grew up walking next door, getting pulled into conferences, getting pulled into hearings, and that's how we learned. And I've heard from a couple other managing directors that their associates have said, don't worry, we're fine. We're actually mentoring each other. The senior associates are pulling in the younger associates or the newer associates, I should say. And those organic, authentic efforts are happening. And I was still skeptical and still worried. And we had a meeting last week of our associates council, which is a group of senior associates, highly touted, highly performing, who we select each year to kind of bring into meetings with management to start teaching them about the business of the law firm. And kind of as a secret, we do all that, but I also want their ideas. Like I want to use them and get their thoughts so that we can employ their great ideas in managing the firm. And so we asked them the question and they almost unanimously agreed, we're doing okay. We're going through these efforts on our own. Now, I get that what our associates say is happening, what our shareholders are worried about are two very different things, but I think we might be closer than we think. I think maybe the shareholders worry too much and maybe the associates are doing far better than we expected they would.
No, that's fantastic. It's wonderful that the firm, it just shows the culture and the firm pulling together in all different levels to make sure things are flowing with ease. So what factors make a great leader?
You know, I suppose it depends on your industry and your, you know, what we're talking about. I guess, obviously, I'll talk for a law firm. I'll talk about my own experience. And I think I'm super uncomfortable talking about, right, like my traits, but I think what I'm trying to focus on, and hopefully I'm right, wink, wink, right? I'm guessing, I'm 3 months into this gig. I think EQ, I think empathy, I think the ability to listen, which I'm actually not that good at. I think I've got the EQ piece. Like I've been an associate here. I've had frustrations in my career. I've struggled with compensation issues or promotion issues. Like I've lived that, so I can get that piece. I'm trying to get better at listening. I think the ability to adapt, if nothing else we've learned in the last 13 months, it's that. I think something I've learned very clearly in the last 3 months is, be able to admit when you're wrong or when you're going in the wrong direction. I was telling someone today, I was in a meeting recently where I went in with this idea that this was the solution. And I was in a meeting with a bunch of my peers and I could feel the vibe in the room was like the opposite. And so I kind of pushed them on it. And it was very clear that everyone in that room whose opinion I valued was seeing it very differently. And so I switched course. And I think that's hard to do sometimes, right? Maybe especially in the early days, but you got to do it. Got to get to the right answer, right? Whether it's your idea or someone else's, you got to get to the right answer. Another thing that I have learned that I think would be responsive to your question is always hear both sides of the story. I've stepped in it a couple times already in 3 months. I'm pretty efficient at that. By hearing one side of the story and kind of just assuming that that's the way everything happened. And that is important to hear kind of both sides. And it does turn out that the truth is usually somewhere in the middle, but you have to make informed decisions. You really do have to hear both sides. And that seems like a no-brainer, but I was a little slow to remember that at times. And that was a mistake. And then I guess I would say, after you've heard both sides and thought through the issues, you know, be confident enough in the position you're taking to instill confidence in other people. You know, I gave you an example a couple of minutes ago where I changed course, but I think that instilled confidence in the group, right? I was like, okay, it sounds like you guys are right on this. Let's go in this direction. I think that was good for our group to say, okay, right? She's listening to us. And if if everybody agrees on one hand and you know, she's adaptable or nimble enough to kind of move in that direction. So that's kind of a constant dance, I think, right? It sounds a little strange to, because I did go into that meeting feeling pretty confident in my position. But I came out of it feeling confident that we had reached the right conclusion, which is at the end of the day, right, the most important thing.
Well, and I think also the characteristic of having the opinion, and maybe it's not exactly where everyone is, but it creates a discussion. And I think that's a great sign of leadership. So what are some of the challenges that women face in leadership from your perspective?
You know, we've kind of hit on a few of them inadvertently in a way. You know, I think being confident enough in yourself to direct your career, being confident enough in yourself to, if you feel like at some point your career or kind of where you are or a decision you're making is going in the wrong direction, confident enough to change that. Look, you and I both read the studies over the years that if there's a position that somebody's interested in, and I'm saying this generally, I don't mean this to be a knock on any gender, right? But if there are 10 job descriptions, 10 bullets on this job description, and we've seen the studies that if a male reads it and he has 5, he's like, I am fully qualified for this gig, I'm applying. Whereas if a female, just generally, not everyone, reads it and has 8, she says, well, I don't have all 10, so I'm not going to apply, right? And I think that's just a sociological thing that we all learned about in college, and perhaps that's getting better, but we have to keep remembering that we're never fully qualified. I wasn't fully qualified for this job. I may not be fully qualified at the end of 8 years. I'm learning every day and I'm doing my best, and I'm really lucky to have a team around me that is helpful. But you know, I think women have to be confident enough to say, even if I am missing one of these characteristics or one of these pieces of experience, I will learn it and I can do it, right? I think we're in a different place than we were when I came into this this lawyering role back in the mid 90s. And we made a lot of progress, but I think we've got a long way to go. And I think we're better positioned than ever to accomplish those challenges.
I think you're right. And I think the idea of being bold, you know, stepping forward, to your point, I do see that occasionally. I think it can be across the board where there is a lack of confidence that occurs when someone's looking at something as a potential opportunity. And to just be bold, to step into it and just go do it. Make it happen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. and then when you do that, you'll look around and you'll see that other people, male and female, have done that, and you learn it, and you figure it out, right? That's part of growing and becoming qualified for the next gig. It's a constant growth strategy.
So to go a little bit of a different direction in our conversation, what does your self-care routine look like?
Define self-care. I'm laughing because that's a really bad time. I assume you're talking about personal interests and that kind of thing, of which I have none right now. I'll just be perfectly honest. I truly tough time 3 months into the gig, because right now I really am pretty much working all the time. And I know that won't, not only is it not sustainable and I wouldn't recommend it, it will even out, right? The first part of this should be expected to be a lot, right? Folks are coming forward after sitting around for several years, kind of wanting to voice their opinion and or wanting something different. And we just finished our comp cycle, so that's always interesting. And there's a lot of learning, right, that happens in the first few months and probably a few years. I used to like to maintain a relatively healthy level of exercise. That slipped a little bit. I try to run just because it's more efficient. I did get a Peloton in December. This is kind of embarrassing. I did it in part because we have a group here called Littler Peloton, you know, that rides together, and they plan these rides. And I thought to myself, this will be a good way to, like, you know, kind of touch like 60 people at a time, right? And like, you know, bond with my colleagues. I think I've done 10 rides, which is super lame because there are a lot of people in that group that are like, I just hit my 1,000th ride. So I really need to get on a better schedule. But I'm hoping maybe the end of Q2, I will turn back to self-care. But look, in all seriousness, I think that women struggle with this, and I have not mastered this. I am failing miserably. For anyone out there thinking that everybody has all the balls in the air, that ball has shattered for me, and I gotta put it back together. I think as the days get longer and warmer, I'll hopefully get back more into a routine. But you know how it is. Sometimes you just go through those peaks and valleys where you do what you have to do, and the things you like to do, you kind of set to the side.
Well, and frankly, in a new role and the expansiveness of the role, there's a lot to learn in limited time when you look at a day.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think when I first thought about this, I thought, gosh, 8 years is a long time. I can do a lot. But the reality is going to go very quickly. And I think that real change, if you really want to effectuate change, there's no reason to delay, right? So part of the folks coming forward with ideas and things is very welcome, because the more brains we have in the room talking about how we can make this a better organization for everybody who's in it, that's a good thing.
What inspires you? And there's so many different things are going on in the world today. And I'm just curious about, when you look at your life as a whole, where do you get inspiration?
You know, I have a 13-year-old son who I think you've probably met, who is a constant source of inspiration and challenge. Don't get me wrong, he just turned 13, and seems like things change a little bit overnight. His hair is blue, and sometimes I wonder from whence he came. But he is an actor. He goes to DSA, which is a performing arts school. And I am constantly amazed at his ability even as a younger kid, right, years ago, to perform. And to this is something about which he is clearly passionate and always has been: singing, performing, acting. And it's super fun to see that someone at that young age obviously he has a natural talent, so maybe it's easy for him. It would not be easy for me. But it's fun to see him in his element doing that. I'm really lucky to have a group of friends that I really don't deserve. And they provide me constant support, encouragement, the ability to bounce things off of. And I'm really, there are not only partners in this law firm, but friends outside of the law even, right, who I talk to. And after I talk to them, to your word, I feel inspired, right? I feel more motivated. I feel a lot better than I did kind of going into the conversation. And so after some tough days of, you know, 14, 16 hour calls, sometimes I call those people and I do feel a lot better afterwards. So I think it's, and this pandemic has presented us all a challenge in that regard, right? It has made those types of relationships for us all more difficult to maintain. And sometimes the last thing you want to do after a long day of calls or Zoom meetings or whatever is get on the phone again. And in the absence of being able to get together in person, that has, I think, made it more challenging for us all. But each time I take the time to do it, I feel better.
Erin, thank you. And I have to say, I'm so grateful for this conversation and your brilliance. And I'm so looking forward to seeing what happens at Littler over the next 8 years. You really are inspiring in what you're doing and where you're going. So thank you for taking the time.
You are far too kind. If anyone used the word brilliance in conjunction with my name and I had a dollar for each time that happened, I would have $1 having just happened. But thank you so much for having me. It's really great to be with you as always. And I look forward to our next conversation.
So thank you to our guest, Erin Weber, for joining me today. And thank you so much for tuning in to Law Life from Gibson Arnold and Associates. Please like us and subscribe to us on Spotify or Apple Podcast, and leave us a rating to let us know how we're doing. We look forward to connecting with you again on our next episode.
a brand new day. And we'll be making history. Are you with me? Won't you stay? We have come so far. This is who we are. And like the rising sun, we have just begun to play our part. This is the time we form the chorus. Lift your voice for those before us. We can rely on one another. Feel the pride, let's show our colors.